You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colt Molesky, and I'm joined again this week by Mitchell Hansen. Mitchell is filling in for David, who has had a bit of a crazy wonky schedule with stuff outside of the podcast, so he wasn't able to join us this week. Unfortunately, he'll be back next week, but Mitchell will be here again. We get two episodes of Mitchell, so you know what? I think that's a win all around for us as well.
Bonus podcasting. It's always great.
Exactly. We're here to talk about the Brooklyn Nets loss that the Timberwolves had last night. Go over what happened there after the podcast is done. If you want to check out zonecoverage.com, where Mitchell and I both write and contribute, there's a lot of great pieces on the Timberwolves and on a bunch of Minnesota sports and sports stuff in general on there. Definitely go check out that site and follow us on Twitter. If you can find us and find our thoughts there as well. Let's dive into this game, Mitch. 98-97 loss for the Timberwolves. Really, the last like 4 minutes were really crazy. But overall, this game was very disappointing. The Timberwolves, I tweeted out the stat of the night really was the Brooklyn Nets shooting 14 of 30 from downtown to the Timberwolves 1 of 11. What an atrocious stat for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, has kind of been the trend so far this year for the Wolves, that they've, you know, kind of lived or died from, you know, the opponents, you know, being able to shoot from beyond the arc. So that, from that standpoint, from letting, you know, Brooklyn, you know, have success from beyond the arc, that's kind of been something Minnesota's allowed teams to do this year. And that's, you know, that's something that has hurt them in a few games. But, you know, like you said, the 1 for 11 from three for the Wolves, that's not gonna do you too many things. But they still were in this game. And I mean, that, you know, for those two stats that you mentioned, you know, with Brooklyn's 14 threes, Minnesota's one. You know, Minnesota still had a chance to win at the end of the game, which I guess is, you know, what all you could ask for, you know, is late in the fourth quarter. So, you know, you think if, you know, Minnesota takes a few threes away from Brooklyn, and, you know, obviously they improve their 1 for 11 mark, this is definitely a different game. But, you know, it was one of those things where Brooklyn kind of had the hot hand last night and Minnesota couldn't catch up.
Well, and a really impressive game, too, from Jimmy Butler. He had the 30 points, and then at the end of the game, he had the nice block, the steal. The block actually turned around into a couple of points for Wiggins, who had the finger roll layup, and then he had the steal. And then at the end of the game, too, that weird play where AC was kind of, his arm was like out, like directing traffic, and Tyus Jones runs into his arm and gets a foul called. His mouth is like bleeding, but AC didn't really do anything to cause it. Tyus Jones just runs into his arm, essentially. My first question when I saw that was, how do players not try and do this more to draw a foul when they're trying to inbounds a pass and somebody's directing traffic, essentially, and they have the opportunity to run to their arm and the foul went his way? Why don't players try this more?
You know, that's a great question. I agree with what you're saying. Is, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with flopping to an extent, where, you know, players obviously try and draw, you know, fouls from flopping. And, you know, that's kind of the same thing that you think more players would do, is, you know, try and create contact. You know, you kind of see that to an extent when, you know, offensively when players pump fake and they jump into the defender to some extent. But, you know, that is a good question. I guess I haven't really thought of that before in regards to players, you know, creating contact, you know, contact in the way that, not saying Tyus did create contact last night, but just kind of those weird plays like did happen in the fourth quarter. And, you know, that was kind of a weird stretch too, because you had, you know, Tyus, you know, obviously getting hit from, you know, it was Quincy Acey's arm, like you said, you know, him running into Quincy's arm. And then like that, basically the next play, Jimmy, you know, gets followed by Acey, and then he accidentally hits Damari Carroll right in the face, or kicks him in the face. So that was kind of an odd sequence for Minnesota. But, you know, that is a good question, that maybe this is, you know, maybe that is something that we do end up seeing, you know, basically, you know, especially in the fourth quarter, you know, players are in playoff time or playoff games, you know, players will do whatever they can to win games. So maybe that is something that, you know, that we will see, and maybe something that is kind of a trend. But, you know, that was definitely a weird sequence last night. And it was, you know, it was kind of a, for that to happen in basically a 10 minute of play span. You don't see that too often. So that was definitely crazy for sure.
It was a weird way to finish the game. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I was totally fine with Butler taking the last shot. I'm not sure who at this point would have a problem with him kind of going ISO ball and trying to win the game. And to his credit, Damari Carroll, he did not have a big offensive game, only had 9 points, but really big defensive game. He was on Jimmy Butler for the majority of the time he was on the court, and just a terrific job defending him. That was about as well as you could have played that. Stayed really tight to him, didn't really give him a great look at the basket, and never really gave up the inside when Jimmy Butler made that push. I know a lot of people don't want to fall into that trap of kind of committing to his speed, and then when he makes that quick stop, kind of almost the Kobe-esque stop where he leaves the guy running towards the basket still. He did a great job sticking with him, but I'm perfectly fine with Jimmy Butler taking that last shot. I don't know who would be opposing it at this point, honestly.
Right, I agree. Jimmy, you know, everyone in that gym knew that, you know, Jimmy was going to get that ball in order to, you know, try and win the game for the Wolves, and he deserved to. I mean, even in, you look at, you know, his numbers even in the fourth quarter, which has been, you know, the trend all season. You know, he had 11 points in the fourth quarter. Obviously, he got to the line 7 of 7 times, but, you know, he is the fourth quarter threat for the Wolves, and he is the go-to guy, and, you know, that has been the case for, you know, this isn't news or new news, that this has been the case for a little while when it comes to Minnesota. But, no, I agree that, you know, he was the right guy to take that last shot, and he should have been the last guy to take that shot. You know, I saw, you know, some people on Twitter talking about how maybe it took him a little too long to initiate the play. You know, maybe he kind of wastes a little too much time, and that kind of forced a shot at the end farther away from the basket than what maybe Tibbs and the Wolves would have liked. But, you know, I mean, that shot goes in, and everyone talks about, you know, how clutch Jimmy Butler is, which he is. But, you know, obviously those shots aren't going to fall every game. But, you know, that shot falls, and everyone's talking about something completely different. They're not talking about how long it took him to, you know, initiate the play and how hard of a shot it was. So, you know, it's just, that's just the way it goes sometimes. Sometimes they fall, sometimes they don't. And I guess last night it just happened, just so happened that it didn't fall for Jimmy and the Wolves.
What's the we're going to get into Andrew Wiggins, and we have a whole thing planned on Andrew Wiggins here. But what's outside of something like that? What is a takeaway from this game? As someone who covers the Timberwolves regularly, walking away from a loss to Brooklyn on the road, what's just the reaction? What's kind of something you can take away from this game?
The thing that kind of surprised me was, you know, over the last probably 4 or 5 games, you know, even branching back a little farther, the Wolves have started off games really fast. Obviously, you know, they had those 17-0, 15-0, 16-0 runs that they've started off games in the last, you know, 3-4 games. This was basically the complete opposite. It kind of seemed like, you know, in those games where the Wolves got off to those fast starts, you know, they came out with a lot of energy. They came out with a sense of urgency, and it kind of seemed like it was the opposite last night. They kind of came out flat. We did see that urgency kind of in the third quarter, but, you know, at that point, that was basically, you know, a desperation run to try and get back into the game because they were falling behind. It was, you know, the Nets had the biggest lead of 12 points last night at one point in the game. But it just kind of seemed like the energy level wasn't completely there for the Wolves, which is, you know, that kind of not necessarily concerns me, but that was something that, you know, I definitely took away from this game. And, you know, people like to look into losing to the Brooklyn Nets, and, you know, with Brooklyn being in many people's eyes one of the, you know, the bottom teams in the league, or one of the lower teams, lower tier teams in the league, they viewed this as a bad loss. But, you know, if they, you know, like I said earlier, if the Wolves, you know, make a couple more threes, hold you know, Brooklyn down in that area as well, it's a completely different game. So I mean, you know, these games happen. You know, you're going to have a player like Spencer Dinwiddie go off like he did last night. You're going to have those games. And I mean, this isn't necessarily, you know, a game you look at and you're basically back to the drawing board and what's wrong with the Wolves. I mean, these games, these slip ups do happen. And, you know, I would expect definitely that the Wolves bounce back strong. They're going to have a tough test on Friday, but against Boston, but, you know, I'd expect them to hopefully in that game come out with a sense of urgency and more energy than what they did last night, for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to pull too much away from it. it was interesting, like you're saying, biggest lead for the Timberwolves was only 5 points. For Brooklyn, it was 12. So a little bit of a flip script there, just the way the last couple weeks have been going versus this game. It really felt like most of the team. I know that there was some solid performances. You had Jimmy Butler with the 30. You had Towns. He had 16 and 10, so another double-double. Wiggins, who we'll get to later, had the 17. Even off the bench, you had Crawford with 10. You had some guys put up some okay performances, but it never really felt like they were clicking together like they were in like maybe the Denver game or against the Lakers. And it something felt a little bit off. And when you have 82 games, it's just kind of how some of these games go out is sometimes you're just a little off, and that's okay. You don't want to pull away too much from this. I would say that the 3-point shooting is starting to be a real concern for the Timberwolves. Just 1 for 11. If you consider this team a playoff team, 1 for 11 is not going to win you any playoff games. And if you have no 3-point shooting, you're going to get swept no matter who you play in the playoffs, is the one thing I would say about this game.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Sorry to cut you off there.
No.
But, the thing is, too, with, you know, looking into that 3-point struggles, the thing is, Minnesota is used to, it's kind of odd in my opinion that they, you know, only shot 13 or 11 times, from three as well. You know, they were struggling from three the entire game. That could have caused the bulk of it, and they got to the line a lot, which could cause some of that, those numbers going down. But you look at the bench. I mean, Jamal, who usually is good for probably about at least five. You figure about 5 3-point attempts a game. He was 0 for 1 from three. Bielitsa, who's usually a 3-point threat, he's been struggling a lot. I know he only played a little over 12 minutes last night, but he didn't shoot at all. It's very, very uncharacteristic of the Wolves to, only shoot 11 times from three, especially at the bench. And, they expect a lot from the bench, specifically Jamal Crawford and Nemanja Bjelica to, help them out in that regard. And, that just really hasn't been the case as of late.
No, yeah, the bench averages like 8 3-point shots a game. So you expect at least close to 11 to come from just the bench. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to get into some deep dive stats on Andrew Wiggins. But first, I wanted to talk about MyBookie. Bowl season is here. It's almost done, but you still have one game left to bet on, and it's time to get on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Sign up at MyBookie.ag today and get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. Bitcoin, I heard, is pretty popular, so definitely a plus there as well. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on, and if you want to make money betting the bowl games, you got to go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site I'd recommend. I trust them, but don't take my word for it. Check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup, as well as in-game live betting all season on NFL and bowl games, as well as I do enjoy live betting NBA games as well. And to join now, MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 50% bonus, 50% just free cash. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, that's LOCKEDONNBA, to activate offer. Visit mybookie.aj today. You play, you win, you get paid. So, Andrew Wiggins last night has 17 points. Not a bad game. Over 15 points. That's not bad. Had a solid defensive performance. He went 1 for 3 from three-point land. Now, I have been one of the guys at the forefront of hammering home Wiggins needs to shoot more threes. We got to get Wiggins hot from three. 17 points, had one made three, the only made three of the game for the Timberwolves. Now, that stat stuck out to me, so I thought I'd pursue it a little bit. And Mitch knows all about this because I was talking to him last night. But I'm gonna give everybody else the kind of the runaround I gave Mitch before we lead up to this conversation. So I went back in the stats. This year, Wiggins has 14 games where he shoots and makes only 1 3-point attempt. And in all of these games, the highest number of attempts he has is 5. But usually it's around 2 to 3. In those 14 games, he has topped 15 or more points 11 times. And 7 times, he has topped 20 points. I thought that's a little weird. That's a little funky of a stat. So I went back to last year. He had shot one, or he has had a game last season with one made three-point shot 30 times last season. 30 games where he made only 1 3-pointer. And in 29 of those games, he has 15 or more points. And in, what was it, 14 of those games, he has 20 or 25 or more, excuse me, 25 or more points. So in 15 games last season, 25 or more points where he only makes 1 3-point attempt. The question I pose to you, and I don't necessarily believe this all the way, but it has shaken my confidence in the stance a little bit looking at these stats. My question to Mitch is, are we wrong about trying to get Wiggins to be a 3-point specialist like everybody I think wants him to be?
I don't necessarily. First of all, those stats are definitely interesting, and they're very weird in that we have really viewed Wiggins as, you know, that 3-point threat. But, you know, it seems like he has been doing better when he isn't focusing on that. But, you know, I think that the emphasis should still be on Wiggins becoming a 3-point threat. Just even branch back to the fact, or the little tidbit that we touched on earlier about, you know, Minnesota struggling from three, that if Wiggins can, you know, bring that into his game, and if he can kind of incorporate that into his game where he can be a consistent 3-point threat, you know, I think that the Wolves will take another step and be harder to play against. But, you know, as far as, you know, thinking about if Wiggins is a 3-point threat, or if, you know, if we should shy away from assuming that or thinking that of Wiggins or wanting that to be Wiggins, you know, those stats, you know, after having time to think about it, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of times when you are playing throughout the course of the game, and, you know, obviously Tibbs has been a big preacher of this over the last few years since he's been in Minnesota, you know, it'll teach you the opponent you're playing, the style of play they play, what pace you're playing at. That'll teach you a lot of, or tell you what you need to do and how you need to approach a game. And I'm curious if, you know, those stats from Wiggins where he's only shot a few times with three, but he does better in other areas, I wonder if that's based off the opponent they're playing, the style of play they're playing. I'm sure there's a bunch of factors you could throw in there. But, you know, it is odd that, you know, you would think that the more times he shot, the less times that he shot from three, he would have a worse game. But that's almost the exact opposite. So it is odd, and I wonder if, you know, maybe it's something, you know, in Wiggins' head, or maybe the matchup he's against, that, okay, tonight I need to focus on, you know, I'll test it out early, see if my 3-point shot is going to be there. If it's not going to be there, I'm going to completely basically ditch it and try and figure out how I can, you know, score elsewhere. So, you know, that it is odd, excuse me. You know, that is a very, very odd stat. And, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, over time, you know, it has become a bigger sample size, and it has become, you know, something that, you know, has become more of an issue. So especially this year with, you know, Wiggins shooting more, but not necessarily, you know, having a better production. So, you know, it is odd, and, you know, that's crazy that, you know, those stats that you threw out there. But it's also great work going, digging back and finding all those stats. That's great stuff.
Thank you. It shows just how much I care about basketball and how much I care about very little else in my life, is that I'm watching basketball games and I'm diving. The Brooklyn Nets are forcing me to do deep dives into stats. And again, I just want to say again, just to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about, 30 times Andrew Wiggins made 1 3-point shot. And the other thing that stuck out to me too was that these are almost, I think it was 4 times throughout this year and almost year and a half stretch where he shoots over 5 or more 3-point attempts. So it's not like he's being incredibly inefficient either. Like in the games where he hits only 1 time from 3-point land, he's usually only attempting 3 to 4 3-point shots. And in last year, 30 times he made only 1 3-point shot in a game, and 15 of those games he had 25 or more points, and 29 times he had 15 or more points. And then this season, the trend continues, 14 games where he's only made 1 3-point shot, and 11 times he's had 15 or more, 7 times he's had 20 plus. And again, all of those are, he's shooting pretty efficiently in almost all of those games, and the outlier is when he goes 1 for 6 or something like that from 3-point land. So it kind of drew me to the conclusion of two things, and I'm going to get to those two things right after this break. Mitch, the two conclusions that left me with are either Andrew Wiggins, and I know it's not a big sample size because he's only been, I was only looking at stats, really digging into stats over the last couple years, and he's only been in the league a few years in general, so it's not like we have a huge sample size. But if going off, again, about a couple year span is fairly decent for sample sizes. If we're going off of that, the two conclusions you have to come to, I think, the two conclusions I came to are, if you're a coach and looking at this, you either have to go, all right, Wiggins is not the three-point guy we want him to be, and it's going to take him way longer than we're comfortable waiting around with that he's going to be the three-point guy. And so you have to go out before this deadline and find a three-point option, I think. If you think this team can actually do something in the playoffs, maybe do something at the trade deadline to get another three-point option, because Wiggins is going to be better with Butler driving to the basket, and then pair Crawford with another three-point guy to add to the depth of the offense instead of forcing Wiggins into it. That's one option. Option B, so that's option A. Option B is you basically nail Wiggins' sneakers to outside the three-point line and say, if you don't take at least 8 shots from the three-point line throughout every game in the month of January or something like that, I'm going to start cutting your minutes. I think those are the only two options, because either you force him into starting to get comfortable and starting to build from the three-point line, or you look for other options and just say, you know what, if Wiggins only goes 1-for-3 consistently throughout his career from the three-point line, he's still going to be really successful as a scorer. Recognize that and move on. Or you force him and really, really make a dedicated approach to trying to make him a three-point shooter. Because right now there is an attempt, but there's not a dedicated approach, I feel like. And so that's the second option. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, just looking at some of Wiggins' numbers as far as, you know, his numbers from beyond the arc, you know, he is shooting, you know, he's shooting a career high 4.3 attempts per game from three, but, you know, those makes, he's only 0.1 higher than what he was last year. He's making 1.4 of those a game. And I think that, you know, that's a little, Wiggins' struggles from beyond the arc, I think, is one of the biggest reasons that, you know, a lot of people, obviously hindsight is 20/20, but when looking back at the Jimmy Butler trade, why a lot of people thought that maybe the Wolves should have offered Andrew Wiggins straight up for Jimmy Butler, or Andrew Wiggins and some other pieces for Jimmy Butler, whatever it may be. You know, and that, because you look at, you know, Zach LaVine, obviously he hasn't played this year from recovering from his torn ACL, but, you know, last year, his numbers with Minnesota, he was that three-point threat, and Wiggins was maybe more so in a Jimmy Butler role where he was attacking and he had more of a mid-range game. But, you know, LaVine last year, he was making almost, you know, just a little over 2.5 threes a game, and he was attempting almost, just over 6.5 a game. So, I mean, that this is something that, you know, Wiggins, although we'd like to see him, you know, become more of that three-point threat and, you know, stretch his game from beyond the arc while, you know, Jimmy Butler and Colin Anthony Towns are doing their thing inside, you know, he hasn't really done that in his career so far, and he hasn't really been asked to do that. He's been that player where, you know, he's always played with a Zach LaVine or somebody that, you know, was that three-point threat. So I think that, you know, it is Wiggins is, you know, still learning at how to become that three-point threat, and he has been that player that, you know, maybe he'll hang around the three-point line, but he's always driving, he's always getting into the lane and trying to get to the line or whatever it may be. So it's definitely something that, you know, Wiggins needs to improve in. And, you know, if he could even get up to, you know, 2 threes a game, you know, that would help, you know, tremendously with the Wolves, because, you know, when you have, especially nights like last night, you know, they only make three, you got to have somebody that's, you know, going to take over in that area. And Wiggins needs to be that player, especially with, you know, the newest additions of Jimmy Butler and playing alongside Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things where it's just about approach. I think I kind of assumed, at least myself, I kind of assumed that he could shoot himself out of it. Now it seems more like it's something that needs to actually be peeled through and taught to him. And so maybe I think you really just got to make him shoot like 8 of these a night. And that's just the only way that you're going to be able to attack this.
Right.
Yeah, so heading out, definitely the biggest takeaway you can take from this game is you need to shoot more threes, especially against, you got Boston coming up here on the schedule, against a team like Boston they got guys like Kyrie Irving and Jaylen Brown who can get hot from three-point land. If you're going to beat a team like this, you got to get hot from there. I think that's it for us here. Mitch, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on Spur of the Moment and jumping in and filling in for David.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, all of you, for listening to another Lockdown Wolves podcast, part of the Lockdown Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.